So if we begin by being honest, I mean completely, totally, 100% honest, how many of us could name 10 fun facts about Ezra? Show of hands. How about 5 facts? 5? 2? 2 fun facts? 1? Is there one fun fact that might come from the body, from the group, the gathering this morning? No, the truth is, Ezra, most of you are thinking, Ezra? What kind of a name is that? Is that his first name? Is that his last name? Is that his whole name? Okay, it's not a Naperville name, is it? I mean, who would name? I mean, I know we've got some people that name their grandchildren Remy, you know, but is there any equation there? I mean, do we call him Ezzy, you know, for short? Well, you don't really need to shorten Ezra, I suppose. What do we know about Ezra? What fun facts or any kind of facts whatsoever can we lift up from Ezra? Well, just for fun, and I mean it, just for fun. No pressure, just for fun. We're going to have it. And I know you don't usually equate the term fun with the next phrase, two-word phrase I'm going to use. I know it usually, they usually don't go hand in hand, but just for fun, I'm going to give you a pop quiz on Ezra. That's meant to be fun, but there are high stakes, really high stakes. Just, you know, no pressure, but there's high stakes. Everyone who does well, you don't have to get 100%, but if you do well enough, there's a free ticket to the mission fair for you. So we can make sure that that happens for you. So here's how it's going to work. Would like, for the sake of integrity, because I know there's no cheating people around here, but just so that you can be assured that there's high integrity and high ethical values being, you know, being part of this whole exercise, like you on your worship sheet, if you can, to record what you think is the correct answer. I'm going to put the answer, the questions rather, on the screen. We usually don't use the screen here for 11, but we're going to put the questions on the screen so that you can see them. I'm going to read the question, and then we're going to give you a musical cue during which time you can record your answer. If you need to phone a friend, you do what you need to do. But here we go. The Ezra exam. Here we go. So Ezra was the lion keeper during the days of Daniel. Now, just how well did you pay attention to Pastor Glenn's message on Daniel last week? Secondly, or B, the furnace, Ezra was the furnace stoker during the days of Daniel. Again, how well did you pay attention last week during Pastor Glenn's message, teaching time? C, he was the king's wine steward, important position in that day. D, a Jewish scribe. Okay, here's your musical cue. Time to record your answers. Free mission ticket involved. Okay, I think that's sufficient time for this quiz. Thank you, music cue. Okay, so who can with great confidence give me the correct answer to question number one? Anybody here with great confidence, complete assurance? Sue? Very good. Free ticket to the mission fair for you. There you go. And anybody else who put D as your correct answer? Well done. Two, and there's only three, so we're not going to belabor this too much. Second set of questions. Ezra was also a contemporary of Nehemiah, B, a Jewish, in quotation marks, accountant based on his obsession with lists and numbers, C, a stickler, in quotation marks, on the Torah, and D, a Jewish priest. Okay, musical cue. I think that's enough time for you to have answered that question. Who boldly wants to provide the correct answer for that question? Anybody want to provide the correct answer? Yes, he was, and you are correct. And so is anybody who put A, B, C, or D, because all of the above are correct. He was both priest and scribe. That is correct, absolutely, 100%. He was also a contemporary of Nehemiah. In fact, the book Ezra and Nehemiah at one point linked one text. It was actually part of a trilogy. Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah were all written by the same author, they suspect, but part of a trilogy. Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, later on the books were divided and chronicled as they are in our scriptures. A fun fact, not part of the quiz, and no mission ticket connected to it, but there's some Old Testament scholars think that Nehemiah was perhaps the shortest man in the Old Testament. They referred to him as Nehemiah. And there's just a lot of speculation involved in that one. There are some who argue and make a strong case for Zacchaeus being a wee little man. But there are others, and this is where the debate gets really hot, who hold out that Bildad the Shuhite was really the shortest of all. Now, that's not part of the quiz, and there's no mission ticket involved with any of that, and I know you're wishing that I would just move on, so I'll do that. So he was a Jewish accountant of sorts because he loved to make lists. For example, he made a list of all of the temple articles. He made a list of everyone who returned from exile. He made a list of the entire genealogy during the Ezra period. He made a list of all the heads of clans or their family units. He made a list of all of those in mixed marriages. Now, mixed marriages were considered sins. Okay? Now, how would you like to have your name on that list? And not only that, but he had influence enough to get it recorded in the Bible. How would you like your name recorded in the Bible as a sinner? Your personal name. I mean, Jesus refers to us in generality, but this is your name recorded there in the book of Ezra. So if you want to read about those sinners, the list is there. He made a list of those who helped rebuild the wall. He made a list of those who sealed the covenant. He made a list of the residents of Jerusalem and all the other nearby towns. And he made a list of all the priests and Levites. Yes, he had an obsession with numbers and lists. So he was all of that. He was also a stickler on the Torah because he believed that if the people knew the Torah and kept it, it would make a difference in their lives. And yes, he was a Jewish priest. Those are all accurate. Okay, finally, last question. I know you're really relieved to hear that. Final set of questions. Ezra accomplished chronicling the return of the exiles under Cyrus, king of Persia, chronicling the list of exiles who returned from Babylonian captivity, chronicling the rebuilding of the altar, two A's in altar, and the temple, chronicling the opposition to the rebuilding of the temple, and chronicling the celebration of the completion of the temple. Music cue. Answers recorded. Enough time. Ready or not, here we go. So, who boldly wants to tell us the final answer? What would be the final answer to question number 3? E, yes. The one not listed, E it is. All of the above. Very, very, very good. And very bold. Thank you for your courage and your confidence in saying E. That's right. He was all of those things. I don't know if that helps you learn a little bit more about Ezra or not, and whether or not any of those facts will stick in your mind or not. There's three things, if we're using this as teaching time, there's three things that I want you to remember from the book of Ezra, okay? And we're going to get into some conversation here in a minute. Three things that you need to remember, and we're going to do it using the school theme. They use the three R's. Really, in the past, right? Three R's. Those of you who remember the three R's were reading, writing, and arithmetic, which is really fabricated. I mean, that is so contrived. I mean, only one of the three starts with an R. Come on. We all know that writing starts with a, yeah, and arithmetic starts with a. I mean, teachers using that kind of spelling to teach the three R's, that's ridiculous. But anyway, be that as it may. Be that as it may, the three R's that really do start with R that you need to remember if you're going to really get the essence of Ezra are these three R's. Return, rebuild, and remain. If you remember those three R's, return, rebuild, remain, then you will get the gist, the essence of Ezra. As Pastor Glenn said earlier, they were in a time of exile. But before we get to the exile, before we get to that, I want you to think about a time in your life where, I don't know if you felt exiled or not, but a time in your life when you finally got to return home. And I want you to think about the feelings you had. You'd been away from home for a long period of time. At 8 o'clock today, we had somebody who just came home from Europe last night. I don't think she was really in our time zone yet. She made it to worship. Her husband didn't. We kind of called him out. I'll hear about that this week. Think about a time when you returned home and how that felt to return home. And I would like to just take a moment and have you, whether it's in groups of two or three, whatever works for you, if you just turn to a person near you and just talk about, to share the story, where you were, what was involved, and the feelings you had about returning home. Can you do that? Just take a few moments and just share. Let me break up your conversations now. I don't know how rich those were. I hope they were. I was talking with Pastor Glenn about his, you know, Pastor Glenn served in the Navy. And so for him, when he came home from that long time away being in the Navy, and he came back, there's a big party, right? Big party welcoming him home is a big deal, you know? For me, it wasn't anything quite that grand. I remember the first time for me, I grew up on a farm in Minnesota. The longest I'd ever been away from home was 1 week of Bible camp in the summer. Okay, so that was my longest stint. And that wasn't even a full week. That was like Sunday afternoon till Friday. Okay, so not even a full week. I remember going to college. And my mom had heard that kids who go off to college and then don't make it to homecoming before they come home, that the retention rate isn't as great, that they have a tendency to not stay, or they'd rather stay home instead of going back to college. So she had it in her mind that I couldn't come home until homecoming. That was going to be 5 weeks. And I thought, oh yeah, you know, I can handle this. I'm the oldest. I know how to do this, you know. I got so homesick. I was so homesick. When that day finally arrived, I could go home and sleep in my own bed, and I could sleep, I could have my mom's cooking, which I loved, and I could see my friends from high school, and I could get together with my brothers and sister. Oh, that felt so good to return home. Anybody have a feeling that you connected with? If you remember what it felt like, then maybe just get a glimpse of what the exiles, they longed to go home. Some 50 years, if the Babylonian captivity started in the year 586 or 587, some scholars debate the exact date, but it's right about then. It's about 50 years before Ezra was able to escort them home, 50 years, and they longed to go home. Pastor Glenn did such a good job last week of talking about Daniel. All those many years, he stayed. He actually stayed. And all those years of longing to go home. If you can connect with that, then maybe that helps you. I also remember a time in our lives when our first son, Bobby, was born. He was born prematurely. And he was 3 months early, which means he's a little over 2 pounds when he was born. And so he's spent the first 2.5 months of his life in a NICU unit. And I still remember vividly the day we got to bring him home and how we felt. Scared, but how good it was to have our son home with us. So if you can connect with some of that, then maybe you can begin to connect with the exile. I want to take a look at this exile slide. Can we just do that for a second? Is the exile slide up? Is that a possibility? If you turn your head slightly to the right, maybe, I don't know if you have to squint or not, do you see between the E and the X? Do you see a house sideways? Do you see that? And if you look between the X and the I, do you see what might be like an arrowhead? A pointer, direction, pointing the way toward home, returning home. And if you look way down toward the end of the word, and you have to squint a little bit more for this, can you see a picture of our grandson, Remy? Yeah. No, you probably can't see that. But if you think about the desire of those in exile was to return home. And think about what that meant for them, being separated from all that was familiar, separated and being in captivity and all that. So the first part of the Ezra story is all about the return home. And in scripture, it says this, Pastor Glenn read it, so well, I'm going to read it for you again. The Lord moved the heart of Cyrus, the king of Persia, to make a proclamation. The Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build a temple for him at Jerusalem. There's two big things going on in that text, aren't there? One is, it's about the return, and it's about building that temple. Think about what God commanded. And think about this. God is using a foreign king, Cyrus of Persia. They're now in captivity under Persian rule. Cyrus of Persia, God uses a foreign king to do his will. Is there no limit to what God can accomplish? Guess not. So this group is permitted to go back home. And following God's instructions through King Cyrus of Persia, first thing they did, you know what the first thing they did was? They built an altar. They built an altar. First thing they did, they built this altar. Why did they do that? Why was that the first thing? So they could worship. First thing they wanted to do, they wanted to worship. They wanted to give God thanks for letting them return home. And God used them then to not only build the altar, but lay out the foundation for the temple. They were led by Zerubbabel. I love that name. Do you love that name? Zerubbabel. It just kind of rolls off your tongue, right? Zerubbabel. He was the governor of Judah. He was actually a descendant of the second to the last king of Judah. It's a fun fact you probably never get to use in Jeopardy, but he was. And what Zerubbabel did, and what is recorded in the book of Ezra, is that Zerubbabel and Haggai, Zerubbabel had this gift of being able to prioritize. They knew how to keep first things first. So they kept first things first in the life of their people. They're ruling their people. They're guiding their people. The first thing was to prepare an altar, prepare a temple so that they could worship. That was first. And the response of that was this. In Ezra chapter 3, verse 11, which again, Pastor Glenn read so well, with praise and thanksgiving, they sang to the Lord. He is good. His love to Israel endures forever. God's faithfulness remains forever. Many, as you heard Pastor Glenn read, read to us shouted for joy. They were enthusiastic. They were exuberant about what was going on. But the older ones, the older priests and the older Levites and the older heads of the family, what did they do? They cried. They wept. They wept. Why? Because the footprint of the temple was so much smaller, way smaller than the original temple built by Solomon. And it was, they could see it was going to be far less grand. So amidst the shouts of joy was weeping. In fact, it was so loud, as Pastor Glenn encouraged us to sing loudly on that verse, it was so loud the people could not distinguish between the wails of laughter and the wails of weeping. They were all intermixed. Isn't that the way it is when we gather for worship? Aren't there times when we gather for worship when people come in and they're just filled with great joy? Great joy. We had a baptism at 9:30 today. Great joy. But if you know the backstory of that baptism, you know that there's great weeping before the great joy. When you know the backstory, lots of times they're intermingled because sadness and gladness get commingled. And that's what's going on in the people of Israel. And then this incredible thing went on, and Pastor Glenn leaned over to me and said, boy, things aren't much different today, are they? Listen to this passage from Ezra number verse 4 from chapter 4. Then the peoples around them, okay, things are going really well. They're building the temple. They're off to a great start. It's full speed ahead. And then the peoples around them set out to discourage the people of Judah and make them afraid to go on building. How did they do that? They bribed the officials. This is in contemporary Chicago. This is ancient Israel. They're bribing officials, discouraging, even threatening the workers. The project was delayed for 16 years. Things don't change a lot, do they, in terms of human nature? You see the parallels in human nature between what happened then and what happens today? Tough stuff. So discouraged and weary from the resistance of the fighting and the obstacles, what happened next? The people began to focus on their own homes instead of focusing on the temple. And they focused, instead of focusing on God's will, they focused on their own individual preferences. In other words, they failed to keep the main thing the main thing. They no longer kept. They ever happened to you when you've been distracted, pardon me, not to keep the main thing? The main thing, think about a time in your life. And the Bible says God was not pleased. Speaking through the prophet Haggai, God challenged them about living in opulence while the temple of God was in ruins. I wonder if you can make any parallels between our world and that world, between how maybe we live and how the work of God is sometimes left in ruins. So God warns them through the prophet. He says this, give careful thought to your ways. And then after that warning from the prophet, he brings a drought, a famine to the land to get their attention. There's nothing like a tragedy to get somebody's attention. And it got their attention. Big time. Haggai encouraged them by reminding the people of the covenant which God had established with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He hinted at the glorious future promised to them. The world would ultimately be fulfilled. That promise ultimately fulfilled by the Messiah. He's hinting at that even while he's reminding them of the past promises of God, which God remained faithful to. All this is mixed in. And then, in the second year of King Darius, God proclaimed through the prophet Haggai, I will save my people from the countries of the east and the west. I will bring them back to live in Jerusalem. They will be my people, and I will be faithful and righteous to them as their God. Now hear these words. Let your hands be strong so that the temple may be built. I will save you and make you to be blessing. And 20 years after they began, the temple was completed. Furthermore, the decree goes on. Furthermore, I decree that if anyone defies this edict, God spoke these words through King Darius, another foreign king. God speaking his word, because they weren't hearing it well enough through their own prophets. He uses a king. And this is what he said. This got their attention. Anybody who defies this edict, a beam is to be pulled from their house, and they are to be impaled on it, and their house would be made a pile of rubble. That got their attention. And the temple was completed. And then in Ezra chapter 6, it says this. The temple was completed. Then the people of Israel celebrated the dedication of the house of God with joy. And this time, everybody is filled with joy, not just the young ones. Everybody is filled with joy because the temple is completed. And interesting fact, even though it was not as grand as the temple built by Solomon, it lasted much longer. Why? People remained faithful to God's promises. God invited them to return. God allowed them to rebuild the temple. And God encouraged them to remain faithful. I was thinking about those themes as I thought about the Rebuilding Together Aurora projects that so many from Good Shepherd, Robert was a house captain, so many from here were engaged in Rebuilding Together Aurora. And I thought about that because I had some rich conversations with those who were doing that. What the people were doing was really trying to allow people who are living in oftentimes inhabitable homes, allowing them to return the condition of a rebuilt home by refurbishing it to a livable condition, to demonstrate in a tangible way God's love for them and encouraging them to remain in God's words and God's promises. So there's a lot of spiritual connections to that physical act of helping to rebuild, refurbish a home, much more than what's going on in the surface. There's a lot going on underneath. Is that a fair statement, Robert? So much going on. And I thought about that with Rebuilding Together and the rich conversations that the homeowners had with those who were there to help them. And they talked about their spiritual journeys, returning into a relationship. You know what it's like, John, to refurbish a floor, to restore it so it can be livable again. It makes a difference. I thought about that when I thought about the mission fair. And ordinarily, I'd try to have a picture up about this time so you could see it, but we don't want to do that, especially at 11. We rather want to invite you down to the mission fair. You've all got free tickets, right, to go down? So you can spend your time down there looking at the pictures and hearing the stories. Same thing with bridge communities. People who are homeless. Restoring to them the opportunity to return to a home. And helping them rebuild a lifestyle that allows them to know how to manage a budget, how to have job skills, and how to interview, and that so that they can rebuild those foundational core things that allow them to be family in a home and to remain strong in those promises. Same thing with Hesed House. That's what we do. We take homeless families and give them skills. And allow that to happen. And I thought about that when I was thinking about Men's Christ Renews His Parish, because that's coming up in just 2-3 weeks. And I thought about past experiences, and there's so many parallels between Men's Christ Renews His Parish and Ezra. Because what's going on in Men's Christ Renews His Parish and Women's Christ Renews His Parish is you invite people to return into a relationship with God. And you hear all kinds of stories about people who have drifted away from that relationship. So they're invited to return and to rebuild the foundational things that allow for a strong relationship with God. And then to remain. They're encouraged to remain in relationship with God, in relationship with one another, in relationship with God's word. And I thought about that with what our Fusion ministry did. And Pastor Glenn, would you mind bringing out that banner from behind the post? Our Fusion ministry took Buddy Break on the road yesterday. They went over to the DuPage Children's Museum. And they took Buddy Break, and there were, instead of having 40 children involved, they had some 300 children involved in the community, 300 families reached. You see, the goal of Buddy Break is to work with families who need to return. You see, one of the statistics that we know about special needs families is that 75% and more don't have a church home. Why? It's too hard. There's physical obstacles. There's other kinds of obstacles that make it too hard. But Buddy Break and Fusion Ministry and our special needs ministry enable families to know that this is a home where they're welcome. They can return to a church that is going to care for their special needs family members and provide opportunity for them. And we've quadrupled the number of special needs families that now come to Good Shepherd because they found it to be a home where all their family members were welcomed. And it began to rebuild relationships, and they have remained because they're growing in their relationship with God. It's powerful stuff. I thought about that with a couple of conversations I've had this week. Two families that came in. And they both want to be part of Good Shepherd. And I said, tell me about your journey. So they told me. And they said, Pastor, when we came here, we felt so welcomed. It felt like going home. And those are the words they used. I'm not putting those words in. It felt like we were coming home to a spiritual home. That really, we felt the power of the Spirit in this place. We want to make this our home. We want to rebuild that relationship we had with God before, so we can remain intact with a faith family. And then another young man who'd been away from the church a long time, never been baptized. His parents had gone to church when he was young, but he was never baptized. And he said, Pastor, I want to be baptized. I really want to be baptized. And I said, well, tell me about that. What's God doing in your heart that's causing you to want so much to be baptized? He said, I need a church home. And I found it at Good Shepherd. I felt welcome the first time I walked in. It felt like home. Those are their words. This is a place where my relationship can be rebuilt, where I can remain strong in faith. It was so powerful to hear those words. What is it about the Ezra message of return, rebuild, remain, that strikes a chord with who you are? I know we don't have a microphone, but any questions pop up from our teaching on Ezra? Anything that's popping in your heart or your mind? Anything that is stirring within you? If you want to talk with Pastor Glenn and I later about it, that's fine. I want you to think about these themes. These themes of how it is that God does invite us always in our spiritual distractions, and we've encountered those, right, to return. God is always putting out the welcome mat, just like he did for the prodigal son, always welcoming home. God always wants to rebuild the foundations of our faith. God invites us to remain in relationship with God and his word. Would you pray with me? Gracious Lord, thank you so much that no matter how estranged we may be in our spiritual lives, that you invite us to return home. You promise to rebuild a relationship. You promise that you will remain faithful to us, and you invite us to remain faithful to you. Amen.